The world entirely is at war.
Troops waiting for the zero hour.
This is D-Day.
They got one.
Veterans Chronicles. For the next hour, join host Gene Pell and an honored roster of heroic soldiers, sailors, and fighting aviators, recalling and retelling their personal stories from World War II...
A state of war.
...to the present day.
Allied Air Forces began an attack on military targets in Iraq and Kuwait.
Now the American Veterans Center and the Radio America Network present Veterans Chronicles with your host, Gene Pell.
Welcome to this week's edition of Veterans Chronicles. I'm Gene Pell, and my guest this week is Oregon Army National Guard Staff Sergeant Matthew Zedwick, who in February 2005 became the first Oregon Army National Guard soldier to be awarded the Civil Star Medal since World War II. He's also been chosen as one of the faces of the U.S. Army's America's Army video game due to his bravery and leadership under fire. And Matt Zedwick, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you.
How does it feel to be a video game icon?
I don't know. It's kind of crazy.
Have you gotten much notoriety about that?
Oh, yeah. My friends are giving me a hard time, but my family loves it. And, it's really good for the public, too. They really enjoy what we have to say as real heroes and people that have been over there. So it's pretty good.
Well, we're going to get into your time in Iraq, but the first thing I want to talk to you about is your other service in the Guard, because I don't think enough people really understand the kinds of things that the Guard does, the various places to which it deploys, and the services it performs. You've been to some interesting places, not just Iraq.
That's correct.
Well, tell me about it.
Well, let's see. First, when I joined the Guard, a lot of our missions and operations that we went on were actually natural disasters. So that was my first encounter with actually anything kind of sort of dangerous out there. And, our mission is to the people, to our home state, and then it's, to the federal government if they need to deploy us to war or combat. But I fought three forest fires. I went down, helped out in Hurricane Katrina. And then some of the other things I've done is I've cross-trained with several different armies of the world, and I've also done a UN peacekeeping mission.
Well, you've even been to Japan, right?
Yep. I just did that last fall, and that was pretty cool. We went over there for 2 weeks, and we helped train their army, and we were pretty much there just for some training value and get to know the people, and they hooked us up with some host family, so it was a real good culture experience also.
What were you doing in Louisiana?
Louisiana, we were down Hurricane Katrina for the aftermath, and our job down there was pretty much to patrol the neighborhoods, and we were looking for people that were having trouble or victims, or we were also out there looking, trying to get the gangs off the street, trying to get people back to their families. We were basically just patrolling the streets, just keeping our eye out for things.
Well, I also noted here that you even have been to Mongolia, for heaven's sakes, on a UN mission in which there were representatives from Mongolia, Tonga, Fiji, Thailand, India, and Bangladesh. That must have been quite an experience right there.
That was pretty fun. That was a good trip. Mongolia is a very pretty country. And, it was a UN participation mission. And once again, our job is to go there and help with the training of the UN and the soldiers and just kind of get used to conducting ourselves through the UN rules of engagement, the ROE. But it was a real good time with those other armies. We had we played a lot of sports over there, did some rugby, and we kind of had our own little miniature Olympics there on the volleyball court. So it was pretty fun.
What prompted you to go into the Guard in the first place?
Well, I wanted to go get my education. I still wanted to be in school, but at the same time, I still wanted to get out there and get some different experience that I wouldn't be able to find anywhere else. And, the military was definitely something I was looking into since at the beginning of high school. And I had a cousin that joined the Guard, so I looked into that and decided to sign up, and I could go active Army anytime I wanted to. So it was kind of a good little introductory thing for myself.
Well, did you have any military background in your family or otherwise, or was this only your own motivation?
No, I have a lot of family history with the military. Both my grandpas served and several uncles on both sides. My grandpa on my mom's side, he was in the Korean War. My grandfather on my dad's side, he was in World War II. And then had two uncles that served in the Navy, one in the Air Force on my mom's side, and then on my dad's side, I had one that served in the Army and a cousin that served in the Army.
Well, so you...
kinda...
Go ahead.
So it's kind of like kind of tradition in a way. I mean, it wasn't something we had to do, but for me at the time, it was kind of like a passage of manhood, you know, just kind of get out there and get your independence rolling. So,
well, you obviously had no opposition from your family about going in.
No.
But I'm sure they didn't know that you were going to be on your way to Iraq at some point at the time.
Yeah, that's true.
What'd you learn?
With my experience in Iraq?
No, just in the Guard generally. I mean, you know, what have you learned from being in the military?
You know, I think the best thing that I have actually learned is just the commitment and the camaraderie that you have with others, and that a lot of it really is self-sacrifice, and it teaches you a lot about yourself. It's more of, you know, I'm in a leadership position, but still it's more part of servitude, and it teaches you a lot of patience and how to serve people. And I think that's the greatest part right there, is that I actually get to go out and help people. And, you know, that's something that makes me feel really good about myself and the guys that I work with, is that we're not out there sticking ourselves in harm's way for nothing. You know, we're out there for the better good of others. And that's really important to me, something that I've learned and always wanted for myself from a younger age. So,
well, let's turn to Iraq and your first deployment there. You had not been there all that long, as I recall, before you got into some very serious problems, right?
Yes, correct.
Well, tell us about it.
Well, it was, we got there in March 2004. And it was a couple months during, and basically our job at the time, we were in Iraq, we were stationed in Taji, which is about half hour, 40 minutes north of Baghdad, off of Highway 1. And our job was to go out in this sector, and basically we're in a rural area, so it's a lot of farmlands, palm groves, and we're right by the Tigris River. So it's a little humidity, and there's some green there, so it's not just sand, but our job is to go out there and patrol and uproot IED teams and mortar teams from the insurgency and prevent them from moving into our area. My best friend, his vehicle was the first one to get hit by an IED. That was going down a dirt road. And, you know, I had served with this guy, and we joined the Guard together, went to base together, got deployed together, and we were best friends in high school. And currently he just got his commission for an officer. But it was several months in, June 13th, 2004. It was a Friday the 13th. Go figure. We were out patrolling, and we checked out this industry. It was an asphalt industry right off the highway there. We pulled in there, checked it out, and apparently that day they were supposed to be closed. There was supposed to be no one working. But there were several people there, so we went, searched them, didn't find anything. But apparently in one of the towers there's a remote device. So after we started heading out and getting back on the main highway, heading north again, this is away from camp, about 10 minutes out of base. One of the guys started climbing the tower, and there was a car parked on the side of the road, and it had its hood up. Well, we were in a four-vehicle convoy, four Humvees. I was the third one. My platoon leader was in the front. And he called back and said, hey, go wide of the vehicle. So just as I started passing the vehicle, I was going wide, and the vehicle's on the right shoulder of the highway. So I'm going wide to the left. Just as I start coming around, this thing just blows up. The guy in the back, my friend, Spike Olson, we'll call him Spike. Spike's his nickname, Richard Olson. He said our vehicle was blowing up like 15 feet in the air, and it sucked us back into the from the left side of the road to the right side of the road where the explosion was. It was that big. Immediately killed the gunner in the back, my friend Eric McKinley, who I'd known for 5 years. I really didn't know what was going on at the time. You know, I was just thinking I couldn't quite figure it out until smoke started settling in the cab and looked over and saw my squad leader unconscious and my door was on fire. And by that time, you know, I had a pretty good idea of what was going on. Started taking small arms fire. At this point, my vehicle was facing south, and now my driver's side, the side that I'm on, is exposed to the enemy. So I start taking small arms fire against my door, and flames are licking the side of the vehicle, and it's starting to go up in the back. Our Humvee was like a pickup-style version. So next thing I knew, I was just going to get me and my buddies out of there. You know, the first thing you learn is when you come under an ambush is to get out of the kill zone, get out of the danger area, move out. And so I kicked the door open, ran around under small arms fire, and ran around the back, and was calling out to my buddy, the gunner, to see if he was okay. And as I started passing, there was nothing I could do, you know. I saw it happen. The next thing I had to do was get my buddy out who's alive. So I ran to the passenger side of the vehicle and started pulling Sean out, who's my squad leader. And there was a second device that was buried in the road. At this time, we had little armor on our Humvees whatsoever. This is during a period when a lot of this stuff was still in production to get over there. And so the glass was not bulletproof at all, except for the doors. The only armor we had was on the doors.
Well, I'm going to stop you right there because we've got to take a break. And then when we come back, we'll pick up your narrative as to what happened next. And you're listening to Veterans Chronicles on the Radio America Network. And our guest this week is Oregon Army National Guard Staff Sergeant Matthew Zedwick. And we'll continue his account of what happened in Iraq after these messages.
You're listening to Veterans Chronicles on the Radio America Network.
World War II.
The German news agency said today in a broadcast that the Allied invasion had begun.
Korea.
The armed invasion of the Republic of Korea by armed forces from Northern Korea constituted a breach of the peace.
Vietnam.
The curfew is in effect for the Saigon, Cholon, Jiezhen area.
The Gulf War.
The skies over Baghdad have been illuminated. Bright flashes going off all over the sky.
A special thanks to veterans everywhere from the Radio America Network.
You're listening to Veterans Chronicles, presented by the American Veterans Center and the Radio America Network.
Welcome back to Veterans Chronicles. I'm Gene Pell. Our guest this week, Oregon Army National Guard Staff Sergeant Matthew Zedwick, the recipient of the Silver Star for his actions in Iraq. And Matt, you were describing how you had come under attack, you were under fire, and you were in the process of trying to retrieve one of your comrades from the burning vehicle. I suppose you had some live ammo in there that must have been cooking off at that point.
Oh, yeah, there definitely was. We had a lot of 203 rounds. Those are the rounds that you shoot out of the grenade launcher that's attached to the M16 or carbine rifle, and those started cooking off, and some of the machine gun ammo that was back as well.
But what did you use for cover, because you were under attack by insurgents with small arms fire and I assume even mortars?
Yeah, we were clear in the open. As soon as I pulled Sean out of the vehicle and the ammo started cooking off, mortars started flying in shortly after. And as the two front vehicles came back around to set up security and to cover us while we were trying to extract from the kill zone. Well, as I was pulling Sean back out in the open, the firing picked up, so the only cover that I had was the vehicle that was on fire, the vehicle that we got blown up in. So I placed him behind the armored door and myself, and just as I had done that, a second IED that was buried in the road had gone off. Several of my buddies had been running over to help me out at that time, one particular, Shane Ward, and he was injured during that blast. And, you know, at that time, I thought I lost another friend. good friend that I'd known since high school. And, you know, so my heart kind of definitely sank a little bit, and I looked over there, but he started moving. So, you know, I started yelling out for someone to help him, and Sergeant Calkins came, dragged him out, and I took Sean to my platoon leader's vehicle. And then the ambush was still going on. After I got him over there and passed him off, I ran back to go get Eric McKinley, a fallen comrade, in the back of our Humvee, but it was too hot and the flames were growing too high, and I couldn't get back there. And the secondary blast and the ammo cooking off in the back prevented me from extracting him out of the vehicle. So the next thing that I could only do was just grab the sensitive items out of the cab, the radio, and ran back to the PO's vehicle we picked up, and we moved south about 150 meters and set up security, and because we weren't going to leave Eric there alone, but we had to get out of the kill zone, so we set up security and wait for reinforcements. At that time, I'm providing buddy aid and patching my squad leader up and Shane Ward and making sure they're all right, and we get the bird to finally come in, and, you know, and the medevac, and we get them loaded on the helicopters, get them out of there, and next thing I know is I'm just going back doing my job after we get them patched up, and it was kind of a weird moment for me.
Well, I'm sure it was. I mean, particularly given you'd only been in the country for about a month when all this happened.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, like, you know, is after we got him on the birds is when it started. I started realizing what was, you know, fully going on, what I had just been through. And my PO came over and checked me out, my platoon leader. He asked me if I was all right, but, you know, I had so much adrenaline running through my body, I didn't realize I was injured myself doing all this.
Mm-hmm. What injuries did you sustain? You had a piece of shrapnel in your wrist, as I recall.
Yeah, my left wrist, and then I have three in my right tricep.
Uh-huh.
And the vest saved my life. The second explosion, my back was turned, and I was dragging Sean to the safety of the door. And, yeah, I had about 14 pieces hit me in the back, so that's pretty bruised up after that. The gunner in the fourth vehicle, Richard Olson, the one that saw my vehicle go up, he was injured also from shrapnel. And they extracted us through a Humvee ambulance, and at that time we had our first platoon of our unit was out there and it was covering down on us. We got all the insurgents that day and seized their weapons. And after that, you know, they were just taking us back to base. That's pretty much what happened that day.
Well, that was a very eventful day. There's no question about that. And your buddy who pulled the safety and was medevaced out, is he okay now?
Yeah, he's fine. He's doing really good. He suffered some vertigo problems at first, and he had multiple fractures to the right arm and the right leg. But you know what? He is doing awesome. He's medically discharged from the Army right now, and he's doing a lot of short riding and some theatrical work. So yeah, he's doing good. I keep in touch with all these guys really well.
Well, you're doing well yourself, and we're going to talk about that a little bit when we come back and your other experiences in Iraq and what you are doing now. And we're going to take a short break here, and then we will continue our conversation with Oregon Army National Guard Staff Sergeant Matt Zedwick right after these messages.
Veterans Chronicles is presented by the American Veteran Center, an educational foundation dedicated toward preserving the legacy of America's servicemen and servicewomen of all generations. The center is home to two organizations, the World War II Veterans Committee and the National Vietnam Veterans Committee, each working to tell the stories of their respective veterans. In addition to this program, The American Veterans Center is also the primary sponsor of the National Memorial Day Parade, held annually in Washington, D.C. For more information on the American Veterans Center and its programs, visit the center's website at www.americanveteranscenter.org or call 703-302-1012, 703-302-1012.
Heavy fighting is still raging.
3,639 wounded.
Red light, green light, and out, out. Get out.
Gentlemen, this is the real thing.
The brutal death march of batons.
Germany calling. Germany calling.
Right in the purest space.
We'll have the air-conditioner
and we'll cheer for Harlem on parade.
You're listening to Veterans Chronicles, presented by the American Veterans Center and the Radio America Network. Once again, Gene Pell.
Welcome back to Veterans Chronicles. I'm Gene Pell, talking this week with Oregon Army National Guard Staff Sergeant Matt Zedwick about his experiences in Iraq and elsewhere. Matt, one thing that struck me in our earlier conversation here was you talked about you'd known this person since high school, you'd known this person for years because you grew up together, et cetera, et cetera. How different is it for a guard unit to deploy to a war zone where you, in effect, almost do know everybody as opposed to some units which have only been together, let's say, during portions of basic training, et cetera?
I like it a lot. I kind of prefer it because we do have that cohesiveness, that bond that started at an earlier age besides the Army. So I think it does make us a stronger unit, and a lot of the guys that are in the National Guard are prior service. So they're bringing a lot of good training from the active Army to us.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the guys that we had in our unit were 82nd Airborne and Ranger and Special Forces. So, it was really good. It was really good that we had those people with that experience, that training experience and leadership. But the bond, you know, that's something that's always going to remain is because, yeah, we're basically representatives of the community from all aspects, and we're working together. So there is a different bond, that's for sure.
Well, I would have thought that to be the case, and I'm sure it makes for better unit cohesiveness and esprit, et cetera. Now, in addition to the experience that you have already outlined for us, along the main supply route north of Baghdad. You were there for the battles of Najaf and Second Fallujah, right?
That's correct.
Now, Second Fallujah is immortalized, I suppose is one word for it, in books such as No True Glory, and we've had the author of that book on this program before, and it was a pretty horrendous experience, or so it sounds like, from everything that I've read and know about.
It was definitely a different experience. Fallujah, my job was a little different. We had just come out of a battle in Najaf a couple months before that in August, and this is during November of 2004. And it was pretty interesting. I mean, I wasn't involved in a whole lot of combat during that situation. I was initially moving in to Fallujah, and when we were setting up base and encampment, we did conduct a couple raids, and we received fire, a lot of fire from insurgency. So we were fighting all the way to the front, and we even received the insurgency even set up a little hideout in the hospital. So they were trying to ambush us from the hospital. Go figure. It sounds like that. Yeah.
I remember reading about that incident.
Yeah. So we neutralized the hospital and picked that area up pretty quick and moved on. And so for the remainder of Fallujah, I was basically doing a talk security, command post security, and that was toward the front. We were the advanced base of action. And
but at Al-Najaf, your unit was right face-to-face with the enemy for some time, right?
Oh, yeah. Najaf was a totally different story. I was at the front lines the whole time, and we call it island hopping. We jump on the hump in the Bradleys, and they'd take us through a huge open courtyard, drop us off in another building, and we moved by ground. So we were the leading frontline force there. And that was about 15-17 days of straight combat. So, yeah, it was definitely a different experience in Najaf. It was a lot easier, I got to say. We fight in Al-Sadr's army, and we cornered them in the mosque because the mosque is neutral territory. We can't fire on it. So basically that's the only safe ground they have to go to. And so we got them there, cornered them all in there, and they eventually surrendered. But that was – Najaf was a pretty good experience. It kind of let me know because I was initially, you know, like force-on-force combat, and kind of let me know how our training and how our tactics actually worked. And I got to say, they worked really well. I think especially our army, the way we work together, what we have going on – I was surprised at how well we did there because we didn't have one KIA in our whole battalion. So we had several casualties, but they were returned to duty the next day. So, yeah, it went surprisingly well.
You worked very closely with Marines on several occasions as well, right?
That's correct. Both those instances in Najaf and Fallujah, the 1st Cav Division, we worked side by side with the Marines. We were actually attached to them to support them and help them out.
You were talking about the fact that your training has served you very well, but how did your training differ from that of a regular Army?
I wouldn't say it's too much different because we all use the same manual and the same tactics, but there are a few things that are different. And it actually has to go by the preference of the leadership. So there's SOP, standards of procedure. I mean, there's, you know, saying there's more than one way to skin a cat. Well, there's more than one way to kind of do something right. But the Army as a whole, the basics of the training are the same. So, and they're established that way, so you can always fall back to the basics, and because those will actually get you through it, whatever you're involved in. So that's, as a whole, the Army, yeah, we do have the same tactics, we have the same basics, the same standards, but when you add on to it, there's different standards of a procedure that a unit may abide by.
Did you think when you joined the Oregon National Guard that you might be going to a combat situation such as this?
I realized it could happen, and at the time, basically, my attitude towards it was, you know, I'm going to serve my country. I'm not active Army. I'm National Guard. It's 1 week in a month, 2 weeks in the summer, and I get to go to school at the same time. And basically, I'm thinking, okay, go to college, get my education, you know, work, be a civilian, and if I get called to war, then, you know, I get called to war, I'll be going. And I had no problem with that. I realized totally what I was getting into, so it wasn't something that bothered me too much, and I didn't dwell on it a whole lot either. So,
well, when you found out you were going to Iraq, what were your preconceptions about where you were going, and how were they altered after you got there?
Yeah, excuse me. Yeah, that was kind of you know, the war was kicking up for a little bit, and we were going over there for the second year of the war, so it already started. So I knew we'd be getting the call sometime, but it was just a matter of time when it would happen. And we were doing our annual training, 3 weeks up in Camp Rialia here in Oregon. And that's when we got the call. It was like right in the middle of our training. And they gathered us all up and said, all right, guys, prepare yourselves. In a couple months, we're going to get ready and deploy. We're going to go to Iraq. And basically, I was thinking, crap, going to war. All right, here it is. Here's that moment. So it wasn't too much a surprise, but you know what? I was definitely a little nervous. It's definitely a little scared. And that's not always a bad thing. It's something that I think helps out in a lot of situations, just kind of have that little edge. So it was a lot of preparation that went on after that.
Well, when you got there, did you find things different from what you had expected or pretty much what you had expected?
No, they're a lot different than what I expected. You know, I just expected dry desert and just stone buildings all over the place, but it was nothing like that. They're actual cities. You know, it was kind of different. It wasn't like the old desert storm thing. And there's hardly any sand where we were at. I was really surprised. It was we were right next to the Tigris. It was a very fertile area.
Mm-hmm.
And, one of the first missions we went on, we went out on this patrol, foot patrol, and I'm ending up walking through marsh. And I'm thinking, you know, what is going on? I'm in the desert. I'm in Iraq. Isn't it supposed to be sand? And here I am walking through a marsh. So it was a lot different. And then, you know, I never would have believed or even thought about the different smells. And it is, those smells are intense.
Oh.
So it was very different than what I expected. And I looked around and I was thinking, man, I got to live in this dump for a year.
And
my first thought.
You were there that long, right?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Well, you were fortunate not to be among those who got extended even beyond 12 months.
Yes.
My son in the Marine Corps, he just came back from Iraq, but the Marines tour is 7 months.
Yeah, we were very fortunate not to get extended, especially because part of our deployment as National Guardsmen, and here's where the training's a little different that you were asking earlier, is that we do 6 months training stateside before they ship us off to Iraq before we do a whole year in theater.
Mm-hmm.
So we're actually on deployment for 18 months.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so it gets to be pretty long when they start extending people. And, you know, there was talk about it and rumors about that we were getting extended. And one moment we were extended for 2 months. And then the next moment, you know, we were going home a month early. But we ended up getting out of there at the actual time that they figured it would be from the beginning.
So now you're back in school, right?
Yes. I'm going to Oregon State University, and I'm getting my business degree. So I have 3 years of school, and I changed my major once. I was a graphic design major, did that for a year. And, yeah, that's where I'm at right now, just trying to get this degree knocked out of the way. So,
what about your buddies?
My buddies, several of them are going to college. Several of them have graduated, got their commissions as officers. My best friend, Ron, he is still in the military. He got out for a little bit, and he just focused on his schoolwork, and he joined the ROTC program, and he just got his commission, along with several of my other buddies. They've got their commission, so they've been prior enlisted and had the rank of E5, a sergeant. So they've put some good time in, and they're going to be great leaders. And then several of my other buddies, you know, they got out and got jobs and doing other stuff. I have one friend that's working for the railroad company. So, I don't know. We're out there doing various things, but we always stick close and hang out. And most of them are still in the Guard, and I think a lot of it has to do with our dedication and commitment that we had with each other earlier. So, you know, we kind of stay in and see how each other's doing. You get a meet up once a month, so it's good.
So you're still active in the Guard yourself?
Yes, I am.
And what does that entail now?
Pardon me?
What does that entail now in terms of commitment?
Right now I'm just back to 1 week in a month and 3 weeks in the summer for the annual training. And that's a commitment that it involves right now. I mean, there's a couple leadership meetings and stuff like that I'm involved in due to my leadership position. But other than that, that's about it. Yeah.
What's the possibility of your organization being called up again to active duty?
Or it's very, very possible. In fact, we're preparing for another deployment in 2009, back to Iraq.
Wow.
So, in fact, when we got home, several of them, because we alternate units and battalions that are being sent over for deployments, there was a deployment to Afghanistan. You know, probably about half of our numbers volunteered to go back, and then went back to Afghanistan. So there's definitely some committed guys.
Well, that's a part of the story that does not get told often enough, it seems to me, that the commitment does exist, and it exists in a very large way, and that here you are, having come back and put your life together again back here, and what you're prepared to return as well, if that's what is required, right?
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you for your service. Thank you for being with us today, and wish you all the best, and hope it is not necessary for you to go back.
Well, thanks for having me, and, you know, I'm really appreciative. Thank you for letting me share my story.
Well, we thank you for sharing it with us. Our guest this week has been Oregon Army National Guard Staff Sergeant Matthew Zedwick, recipient of the Silver Star Medal for his actions in Iraq. That's it for this week's edition of Veterans Chronicles, produced by Tim Holbert for the American Veterans Center and Kenny Burns for Radio America, in association with Pellcom Communications. I'm Gene Pell. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, veterans, for your service to our country.
The great sea and air battle has been raging in the Solomon area since last Sunday.
From the Radio America Network.